This week we're going to look at, we looked at fathers last week, but this week we're going to look at, we're going to really dive into the story of Jesus during the Last Supper. What did he do? And we know it was during the time of the Passover festival that the Last Supper took place, and we're going to look more kind of emphatically in this. But I want us to jump real quick in trying to make some connections. So we sang, and I don't know if you're thinking about this when you're singing, or when you're singing, like, hey, you are calling upon the Lord to come and be with you this morning. Like, do you really believe that something, that this is a relationship that you're in? Because when Jesus resurrected and he was on the road to Emmaus, these two guys, it said after they talked with Jesus, and after it says what he did was, he explained how everything starting with Moses wrote the first five books in the Bible, climaxed with him. That's what he told these two guys after he rose again from the dead. It said their hearts burned, right? Their hearts burned with desire for him. And they felt a lot. And so when we're singing this stuff, you know, God, please burn a fire in our hearts. We are singing the Gospel of Luke scripture, what happened to these two men on the road to Emmaus. And I sometimes think we can be so passive in our engagement to God. Like, okay, God, what are you going to bring to me this morning? Yes, God comes to us. But there's another dynamic that James talks about. He says, look, when you draw near to God, he draws near to you. I mean, there is a real back and forth in your relationship with Christ, and it matters what you're thinking about and how you're singing, right? When we're praying, are you really praying, or is your mind wandering? When you're singing, are you just trying to hit the notes and make sure you don't sound silly to the person next to you? Or are you singing to God? It's these practices that will change us over time. And that's what we believe. And as we walk through the Gospel of John, here's what we're deciding. To let the Gospel of John shape us. We're gonna be in this whole Gospel for a year. I mean, a year in the Gospel. You know what I can't do? I cannot pick and choose what I want to preach on. I can't. The Bible chooses for me through this book what we have to preach on. The kind of, the Jesus or John's view of Jesus is formative for us. And that's what we're allowing. The Gospel of John to completely form us this year. So I want you to turn to John chapter 13. And we read this, but it wasn't on the screen last week. And we're going to walk through this very, I mean, this is a game changer right here, this posture of Jesus. It was just before the Passover festival. Jesus knew that the hour had come for him to leave the world and go to the Father. Having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. The evening meal was in progress, and the devil had already prompted Judas, the son of Simon Iscariot, to betray Jesus. Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power and that he had come from God and was returning to God. For one second, think about what that verse 3 means. What does that mean to you? He goes through this. John just says, there's a turncoat, and he's probably sitting right next to Jesus. And Judas, the devil, had already taken him. And Jesus knew, though, that the Father had put all things under his power. In other words, at that moment, Jesus could do anything he wanted to in that moment. Hey, Simon, I think you should have 5 ears. Boom. You know, I think you should do this. He could do whatever he wanted. He could take anybody out. He could bring anybody there. And Jesus knew that he had all this power and that he had come from God and was returning to God. In other words, he was going to go to the Father. So that's the peace of mind Jesus has. I have all this power. Here's what I know. I'm going back to Dad, period. I'm going to go back and be with my dad. I know that that's going to happen. Now, in that moment, when you have that type of power, like literal power, and you have that type of existential care, hope, knowledge, I'm going to be fine. I'm going back to Dad. If you're that person, what do you do with that? What do you do with that type of peace and power? Because to me, this is, man, when you're in that spot, I mean, you are safe and you are powerful. And when you know, right, that you don't have to do anything, he gets up from the meal. His response to all of this is getting up from the meal, took off his outer clothing, and wrapped a towel around his waist. After that, he poured water into a basin and began to wash his disciples' feet, drying them with the towel that was wrapped around him. He came to Simon Peter, who said to him, "Lord, are you going to wash my feet?" Jesus replied, "You do not realize now what I'm doing, but later you will understand." "No," said Peter, "you shall never wash my feet." What areas in your life incite shame in you? I mean, what areas of your life are you like, "Oh, God, no, you don't understand. This is a dirty, smelly, rotten part of me." I mean, I don't even let the lowest of the low servants do that. It's so terrible. And Jesus' response to this power that he has and the peace that he has is to what? To literally get on his knees, to exchange a what? A scepter for a towel. I mean, that is the God that we have. He puts his scepter down and he picks up a towel. Jesus is saying, look, here is how you should live. The first shall be last and the last shall be first. And he drops to his knees. I mean, imagine Jesus doing that to you. I mean, I can resonate with what Peter, you don't want to smell that. You know, Jesus, what are you talking about? What do you mean? This is what I do. I want to be with you. I wash the dirtiest things in your life, right? What's going on? We know Peter struggles deeply. We know Peter, literally, we're going to see in the very next section, he's Benedict Arnold, man. Not only is Judas Iscariot Benedict Arnold, this turncoat, he is. And, you know, we all have this feeling of, man, there's this part. When that anger moves into personal sadness, you get over the anger, right? And it drops into this sadness, and you don't want to go where the iceberg takes you, because you know the lowest level and the bottom part of the iceberg is, it's not sadness, it's just shame. I don't want to look at that. And Jesus says, that is what I'm here to do. And some of you are locked up because of what you've done or what you are doing right now, and you think, no. Because here's the point, that dynamic that happens, that shame hates exposure. It does. It hates exposure. It'll do whatever not to have it. But freedom looks a lot different. I remember probably about 7 or 8 years ago, we had a family over. It was a new family we hadn't really known that well. And my little boy Jake was two, maybe a little younger than that. And he and Frankie were playing out in the yard. And he just comes, we're in the living room, and he just comes flying in, right, with mud and dirt all over him, right? And no clothes on, like completely naked and just dirty, muddy. And he just kind of was like, "Hey," and he keeps running, you know? And I remember looking at him like, oh, like this is a dirty, right? Dirty, nasty, naked young boy, right? And he feels free in his house, and he just runs the other room and he gives us a nice little wave and a hello. I thought, man, what? That's formative, right? That should be, I mean, what Jesus is saying, will you let me be with you in these hard moments? Will you let me wash my feet? And what's Jesus' response? How would Jesus respond to, "You shall never wash my feet"? How would the Lord of creation respond to that? Here's what he says. Unless I wash you, you have no part with me. Because you can't wash yourself. You can't clean yourself up. Unless I give you a bath, right? You can't be clean. You think that you can come and put on your Sunday best or play the part. And he says, no. You, unless I wash you, you have no part with me. Right? Unless I wash your feet, unless I wash all of you, you have no part with me. There are no half Christians. There are no, I've heard some people say it this way. Christ doesn't have fans that sit in the stands and cheer him on. There's no such thing as a Christian fan. It's all followers. Just followers. Either you're a follower or you're not. You can't be a fan of Jesus. You're either a follower or you're not. And what does Peter do? Unless I get all of you, Peter, unless I give you the bath, unless I clean you, You are not clean. You will never be clean. And this is the part of Simon. And you know, Simon Peter, that you know that he, I resonate with him because he gets it. And he gets it again and gets it again and gets it again. And so what does he say? Then, Lord, Simon Peter replied, not just my feet, but my hands and my head as well. You see the dynamics that are here? I mean, the dynamics of Simon Peter, when Jesus says, unless I wash you, you will have no part with me. So Jesus in love came and met shame, right? And what's the answer going to be? Because when love interacts with your shame, what is it? What is the part of your life that you are most unimpressed with? What do you feel the worst about? When love comes to that, what are the dynamics? And look at Peter's response. The Lord, Simon Peter replied, then Lord, not just my feet, but my hands, my head, everything. Okay, I'm not just going to tell you about alcohol, right? I'm going to tell you about anger in my life, God. I want to do things that I shouldn't want to do to people that I don't like. And even I want to do things to people in my family that I shouldn't even cross my mind. I don't want to give you that, God. That is so shameful. Let me wash it. Let me get on my knees, Frank, and let me wash that. No, you don't understand, right? You don't understand. I need this girlfriend. I have to be in this relationship. And I know we're doing things we shouldn't do. And I don't want you to see them, but if they happen, give them to me. No, let me talk. Let me clean them. Let me give you some freedom. Because that shame and that exposure, right? It hates the exposure, and sometimes it hates the love. And only when what? When love can only overcome shame, it only does it with faith. If the love, right, and shame interact, what is going to win the day? If that love is met with faith. Or excuse me, if that shame, right, you say, okay, I've met the love, but I have to have faith. I have to have faith that there truly is forgiveness and cleansing. Because, what are we, 7 billion people in the world? I mean, what, a third or maybe a quarter are atheists. So, whatever that is, mathematicians, whatever number of people that is, 2 billion people think that we're crazy in this room. We're sitting in here talking about an invisible God who we think wrote this Bible. But it takes faith. And so love can only overcome shame if you give it faith. And that's what Peter professes. Unless I wash you, you have no part with me. Do you believe that, Westtown? Because Simon Peter's response is, then take it all. Take every bit of it. What if you were to say that right back to God this morning? Okay. Here it is. I am not wanting to be a workaholic, but I am, and I know you see it, and I don't want to deal with it. I feel ashamed because I miss things, and I'm only caring about the bottom line of how much money that I can bring in, and that's terrible. And Peter says, take it, right? I'm going to take you fishermen, and I want to make you fishers of men. And so they dropped their nets, and they followed him. That's what the disciples did. They heard about Jesus, and they dropped them, and they followed him. And here's Peter continuing to understand the gospel in new ways. And he's getting it again. Oh, wait, that's right. You are the cleanser. You are the one that washes me. And you are a servant. So Jesus answered, those who have had a bath need only to wash their feet. Their whole body is clean. And you are clean. What is he saying to Peter? No, Peter, look, I see your heart. You're a Christian. You follow me. You know, I mean, like, you get it. I know what you're thinking. You got it. You got my love. You followed me, and your heart has been here the whole time. And then he kind of scares me. Though not every one of you. There's only 12 disciples. And they've been following him around. He goes, Peter, you are washed. But, hey, wait. I know there's one of you. For he knew who was going to betray him. And that was why he said not everyone was clean. That should scare all of us at a certain level. Wait, you walked around with Jesus. You were one of the 12 disciples. And he wasn't even a Christian. He didn't know Jesus. That's what Jesus is saying. Yeah, you can follow, you can be a fan of me and be around me and never know me. Judas Iscariot, the betrayer, devil got a hold of him and he still sat at the Lord's table. He was there and he was faking it the whole time. He didn't know him. He did the game. He did the religious thing. That should scare all of us at a certain level. Not that we walk around thinking that we need to accept Jesus over and over again each week, because some denominations or strands believe that, which is untrue. But you need to make sure you're truly a follower and that your heart has been cleansed by Jesus. When he had finished washing their feet, he put on his clothes and returned to his place. "Do you understand what I've done for you?" he asked them. "You call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, for this is what I am. Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet." So a number of the volunteers that were up here in first service, they decided, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to metaphorically wash the feet of sixth grade boys. And I'm going to take, out of my 3 weeks I get a vacation, I'm going to take 1 week, right? I'm going to take one whole week away from my family that I should be able to do whatever I want to do, and I'm going to what? I'm going to serve sixth grade boys. Whoa. I mean, that is awesome. When you decide to go away for a week and you could be relaxing, you could be doing whatever with your family, but you decide to go away for a week and not just veg, they're going to serve. And what we prayed is, because sometimes you got to shoot a basketball, you got to play a game of 21 with a sixth grade boy, and other times they just need you to sit down and talk with them. And that's part of camp. And they're going to discern that and talk about that. What's God doing in this kid's life? What's God doing in this? And you know what? I'm going to take a week away from my family during my vacation, and I'm going to wash the feet of sixth grade boys. I think that's beautiful. I mean, you think about even some of the small acts that we can do for one another. Even here, I think about Vernon and Annette. They do the snacks. But what happens here sometimes is they get on a list of people who bring food. And I want to say thank you. Because that is a selfless act. You may not think that it's a big deal to pop over to Publix and get some cookies, right? Or pop over wherever and bring them for us to eat. But you know what can happen is that maybe someone who isn't as comfortable talking with people decides they want to come to church, and then they realize there's some desserts back there and maybe a coffee, and they go back there and it stalls them for 4 to 6 minutes. But in that 4 to 6 minutes, someone who is selfless here in this room, who doesn't just go and talk to their friends at this church, who they just want to talk to, see somebody that doesn't really look like they're talking to anybody, or they didn't really know anybody, and then they go over to them, and in that 4 to 6 minutes time, they ask somebody a question about themselves, and then they start talking, and there's maybe a little connection. And that 4 minutes turns into 12 minutes. And then they say goodbye, and they go back in their car, and they go to their house, and in that drive home, they think, you know what? That was cool. Frank wasn't too weird, and, you know, like, they seemed like they didn't have to talk to me. They did. I know it's a small act, but you know what? I'm going to give it another try next Sunday. And we have seen that happen. When God uses you and your selflessness to just do a small act of kindness, a small act, but it's because you've had your feet washed. Peter, you've been bathed. You know what it means. I mean, I know you're emotional. In fact, you're going to do some crazy things here, but no. You are changed. Jesus says in 15, "I have set you an example that you should do as I have done for you." The lowliest of jobs, the washing of someone's feet. Yesterday I was at my son Frankie's baseball game. It was a bigger game. All these bunch of new uniforms. Everything was perfect. The field, everything. The coaches kind of walking around, you know, taking themselves very seriously. It's the whole thing. It's great. Yeah. And the crowd's into it, and the game's going on, and I see this. It's like he must have been a 75, 80 year old man, and he wasn't paid, and he just kind of was on the side with a rake, right? He's had a rake, and every opportunity he got to get out there, if someone slid into third, you see him, go up second base, first base. There was, and then when there was a pitcher being changed out, he helped the mound, home plate, right around home plate. And then immediately when the game ended, boom, he was out there. And it was like the smallest thing. But here, I mean, why would that guy want to do that? I thought, man, you know, I know it's not a big deal to some people, but here is a guy who can just be relaxing or doing whatever he's doing, and here he's raking dirt so that maybe a shortstop doesn't get a bad hop because there's a rocky, you know, rocks in it, or it's not as level as it could be. It just seemed so selfless to me. Here's a guy with a rake just trying to serve 12-year-old boys. How cool was that? It was not about him. He didn't talk to him. You could tell he would just, hey, I just want to do my thing, and I'm not trying to perform or anything. I just thought, what kind of mindset? I don't know if that guy knew Christ, but how much more for us as Christians? I mean, what could you do for your spouse today on the way home? What could you do this afternoon or this week? How could you serve them? If you've been served by Jesus, if he has literally gotten down with you in the dirty, smelly areas and rooms of your life, he says, use that. Use that. Use my love for you to what? To then serve the others. Very truly, I tell you, no servant is greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. Now that you know these things, you will be blessed if you do them. Now, I'm not talking about health and wealth gospel here, but I am telling you, you will feel happier inside when you serve somebody else beside yourself. You will feel better. Some of you are angry and sad, and part of that is because you're thinking about you. I know that's when I get the crankiest, is when it's about me. It's about, oh, no, I want it this way. It's, no, it's like this. Frank, who are you serving? Well, I'm trying to serve. No, in this moment, you know, you want to be right more than anything. And that's sick and black and sticky all on your heart. And you've got to go back and read a passage like this. Because you're the one with smelly feet. You're the one with a smelly body, a dirty body. And Jesus cleaned all of it. What if we lived like that? What could our church be like? What would marriages be like? What would your relationship with your brother be like if you served him? It wasn't competitive, right? You just served your brother. You served your sister. You went out of your way to say or do beautiful things to your sister. Tell me that the family dinner table wouldn't be completely transformed. What would you do for your father, sons? How can you serve your father? Fathers, how can you serve your sons, mothers and daughters? He says this, a response, it's got to be action. It can't be talk, right? It cannot be just words. It's, hey, what are you going to do? You're not saved by this stuff. But Jesus says, if you know me, this is going to be your reaction. If you know me, here's what we do. We find somebody to serve. Can you serve your servant, right? That's what I mean. When an adult takes time to be with junior high boys or junior high girls, it's going to be smelly there. Very. It's going to be a lot of activity. It's going to take a lot of energy. And to do that, that is service. That is denying yourself a week, picking up your cross and following him, right? Following him to the basketball court, following him to the chapel, following him to the springs, to the, you know, big blob, to the water slides they have there, and being with them. How can you do that? One way that I feel like response to this can be, and you see in the bulletin, we need some funds. We want to make sure we're up with our budget. And you see where we are in our budget. We're a little bit lower than we need to be. And love can be shown through the gift of financial gifts. We're looking to add a pastor. We're looking to add a couple of staff positions. And in order to serve our congregation as well as we can, we know that that takes funds. That takes an actionable response in a gift of money. And some of you have a great gift of making money. And, you know, that's all from the Lord. And he says, hey, I want you to do that. Money is not bad. Money is not bad at all. It's the love of money is what begins to make us. So one of the ways to combat that is to give it away. Make sure that you're not. And we have to be responsible stewards of this. If you don't give it to the church, give it away somehow. Give it to another organization. But learn to be generous givers, right? That is a response to the generous love of Jesus. We do need workers and helpers here at the church to help with the kids ministry. That every time, you know, someone leaves, they're giving up time to be in here and to, hey, go serve fifth graders. Teach them for 25 minutes to 35 minutes. It's a gift to those of you that are parents in here when you have another worker, you know, working for you and serving your child and teaching them a lesson. That's a selfless gift. Jesus says, have a culture here at Westtown of giving, of being a servant. You know, who has served you over the past week? I mean, think of someone who has in some way served you. Tell them thank you this week. Just acknowledge, right, the gifts that you've been given. And when you can understand what Jesus is doing here, when you can understand this type of gift, he says it's going to be action. Because Jesus has saved us. He has saved us from ourselves. He saved us from this world. He saved us from Satan. And to the extent that we can comprehend that, I tell you what, he says, look, it should be action. Your response to that, it's not to get the love, it's the response to the love. And so, where are you this morning? Where are you? What does the king that takes his scepter and puts it down and grabs a towel and gets on his knees and washes your feet, what does that do? What does that picture, right, do for you? He says, go and do likewise. Go and give of yourself. Because it's only when you give, it's only when you become the servant that you'll understand that the last is really first. And, you know, one of the craziest things about being on mission trips to areas that don't have as much money as we do is finding out, singing and interacting with other believers. And I remember as a 16-year-old boy going to the poorest part of Jamaica and walking into shanties. And they're the most, I mean, those that know Christ, they are blessed. They know peace. It's not about the things that they have. And it was stunning to me. The son in a rich white family, right? Walking into a Jamaican home and just being like, oh my goodness. I mean, we have Jesus. That means we have the same amount of stuff. Right? We have exactly the same amount of money if you want to monetize faith or salvation. We're exactly the same. There is no one that's different. And it was stunning to me because I thought stuff, right? Stuff puts you up here a little bit. And then, you know, to the extent that you had stuff where you live, whatever. And it's not. Everybody is exactly the same. If that's true, if Jesus's response is to get on his knees and serve you when he has everything. He's the king with everything, with all power. And his response is service. What's your response? Is it service? Because this is the action that Jesus wants from us. He asks for us. And you have to deny yourself and pick up your cross. Let's pray and ask that God would work this into our hearts. God, we thank you for Jesus. I don't know. I sometimes don't know how to do this in my life, how to make it practical. I know that you're calling me to serve my wife and to serve my kids and serve my friends and my church family. Help me to do that. You know my own sin of pride and feeling entitled, and you have to kill that in me. God, for those in this room, may they see Jesus as just this perfect example, this perfect this perfect action to those that were called to serve him. He is the master, and here's the master serving the servants, the help. And so, God, thank you for this picture. Teach us humility. How does Westtown Church posture in a humble way to each other, but also to this community? You have to kill ego. You have to kill perception. And teach us how to do it. Thank you for the Gospel of John and how these words, they pierce our heart. Thank you in your name.
Amen.